Stay hungry, stay foolish.
So it's a great pleasure to invite Mike Feinberg, co-founder of KIP, Knowledge is Power program, to the show. Mike, you're very welcome.
Aidan, thank you so much for having me on across the sea. It's great to talk to you.
It's a great pleasure because I read about you first in Paul Tough's book, How Children Succeed, and what I was doing as a father, but also as a coach, was to understand elements of how people develop grit, and the work you've done to unlock that advantage that people have where they come from places of adversity is really admirable. And I just wanted to talk to you about how you managed to innovate in a very, very traditional environment of education.
Sure. Happy to engage. KIP, the Knowledge is Power program, was started back in 1994 by Dave Levin and myself. We were two Teach for America teachers. I know, you know, Teach for America is now part of Teach for All. I know there's Teach First in England. I don't know if it's where you are as well, but it's a program that recruits recent college graduates that are not education majors to go into teaching for at least 2 years before they embark on their career in law, business, medicine, engineering, and just use their skills to contribute to what's going on in especially underserved communities in those schools. And so Dave Levin and I were these two Teach America teachers back in 1992 that were placed in Houston, Texas, in two impoverished schools. I was on the north side, Dave was on the south side. We were both upper elementary teachers. And we got very frustrated quickly in that it seemed like it didn't matter how good of a job we were doing with our children. That was the last year of primary school before they went up to secondary school. And when they start, when our former kids went to secondary school, we realized that they were still, no matter how good of a job they were doing with us in our classroom, they were going off to middle secondary schools and they were joining gangs and doing drugs and skipping class and becoming just as many parents as the typical statistics in those schools and neighborhoods. It was very frustrating. And in the fall of 1993, we actually quit finger pointing at others and looked in the mirror and pointed at ourselves and said that we had the kids for a whole year as teachers. And we could honestly say we gave them all the academic skills, all the intellectual habits, all the character qualities they would need to go off and forget just doing well in sixth grade or passing the next test, but were we really propelling them to have a transformative education to do well in middle school, high school, universities, and beyond, and have a great life? And the answer was we weren't even close to doing that. So we sat down at the computer all night long, turned on you'll love this one given your country. We turned on YouTube, Octung Baby, repeat play. And we had that play until about 5 o'clock in the morning when we had the Knowledge is Power program on our computer screen. And the premise of KIP back then in late 1993, it is 23 years later, is simply there are no shortcuts. If we're going to try to provide children with all these academic, intellectual, and character skills, quit looking for the magic bullet, the magic computer software program, the magic teacher training module. Let's just roll up our sleeves as teachers and get after it. And so we motivated kids to come to school from 7:30 to 5 during the week for 4 hours every other Saturday for an extra month in the summer. And we would give them 2 hours of homework every night, all in the name of getting a great education and getting ahead. It worked well, but it was 1 year. We still didn't have any good middle schools, secondary schools to send our kids to. So in 1995, we convinced the Houston School District as well to let us do this. Dave Levin's from New York City. We also convinced the New York City School District to let us do it there too. And so in 1995, KIP became these two schools within schools in Houston, New York, fifth grade through eighth grade, as choice public schools in underserved communities. And then in 2000, after these two schools were doing very well and news programs like 60 Minutes were coming out and doing pieces on our kids because we were performing at – our kids were at the top levels in Houston, New York. We partnered up with Don and Doris Fisher, the founders of The Gap and Old Navy clothing stores, to figure out how to replicate this good work in other places. And we did that by recruiting other great teachers and training them for a whole year how to plan, open, run their own KIPP school and basically teach them how to be principals, how to be school leaders. And they would found their own schools mainly through the charter school law across the United States. And today, that's how there's now 200 of these KIPP public schools in 20 states in D.C. with 80,000 kids. And the results so far are we look at all of our eighth graders, wherever they go to high school, whether they stay with us or go elsewhere, over half of them have graduated from universities. And compared that with 8% of low-income kids in the U.S. who graduate from universities, we're 6X, and we celebrate that value add. But our goal is 80%, which is what top quartile income kids in the United States go to and through the universities at that rate. So we're proud of the work we've done thus far, and we have a lot more work to do.
That's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal work. And to it just shows you that a couple of guys can just make that big of a difference in something that seems like just a massive, massive task. And it was that mindset that I really wanted to talk to you about, that, you know, you overcame, I'm sure, so many huge obstacles, and, you know, you're fighting the tide all the time because, you know, within a company, if you're in any company, people tend to accept the excuses. The, you know, like you did, you said, okay, well, what am I doing about it? And you looked in the mirror. And I'd love to know about that. Like, how did you keep yourself motivated? How did you get others on board?
Yeah, it's a great question. You're right. I mean, in any large bureaucracy, innovation's not encouraged. You're supposed to kind of keep your head down and go with the flow. And I think what motivated us back then to try something different, and what's motivated us every day ever since, are the children. The fact that we're creating these opportunities for kids to come to school longer every day and make sure they're getting their homework done and having a longer year. It's not skill and drill. We're not just passing out worksheets for 10 hours a day. We're doing our best to make learning fun, but our kids could be choosing other schools with less hours and less days, and yet they're showing up every day eager to learn and learn what they need to do, not to pass a test, but to have a great life. And if they're willing to make that choice, then that's been the motivation for us, the adults, to deliver on what they're searching for.
Yeah, and when I say, I mean, the obstacles, I mean, for somebody listening to the show will think, oh, he means, you know, the obstacles of the system. But when I read deep into KIPP and some of the work you've done, it's the kids themselves at home. They a lot of these kids, they're not expected to succeed. And in fact, there's probably a little bit of trying to, you know, the tall poppy syndrome where you're not good enough to be getting out of here. None of us are. And trying to drag the kid down. And how you overcame all that as well. And I know that's where you built your network and your alliances to make that happen. But any kind of nuggets on that, Mike?
Yeah. You know, every kid wants to belong to something. They want to be part of a group. They want to be part of call it a gang. You know, I mean, the question, are they going to have options to join a positive gang, or is it going to be a negative gang? And too often on the streets, there's plenty of opportunities to join negative gangs. What we did was we created not just a school, but a culture of team and family where kids truly felt like they belonged. And there was a sense of they had their family at home, and then they had their family at school. And they knew that we considered ourselves a team and a family, and we looked out for one another, and we solved problems together, and we lifted each other up. And I think just creating that kind of you know, every school and every community is a natural hub to create that kind of culture. Unfortunately, too often the people that go through education training to learn how to lead schools. They might learn good education pedagogy, but they don't learn how to create these type of supportive, nurturing cultures that sustain over time. And I think that's what we've trained our teachers on how to do, to create these places where kids want to belong.
It's so reflective, Mike, of corporate innovation, where, you know, you'll start off and you know, I call them nerd clubs or watering holes, where you get the lion and the zebra to drink peacefully together and create, you know, from different silos within companies. Yeah. And you create a bit of positive momentum. And then where other people start looking in and kind of going, I want to be part of that. And yeah. But I suppose, I don't know if you've seen this, but is what happened for you where the people who aren't part of that either complain and go back to their corner, or, you know, how do you get those guys on board? Because I know you're not going to win everybody, but what tricks have you learned, or techniques to try and get people to be more attracted to that group?
We'll talk about the techniques in a minute, but I think you put your finger on what I can still consider to be one of the two biggest challenges we face in all of this. To me, the biggest challenge remains teaching children any given day, any given subject, any given hour, because trying to teach is an easy thing. Trying to teach well is a very difficult thing. It's like being a parent. It's easy to be a parent. It's hard to be a great parent. And teaching is both an art and a science. That remains the hardest thing there is. Second to that, what I found is like, this is like the headwinds to me are the beliefs and mindsets across the United States, which I've learned through Teach for All are prevalent. It's not just a United States challenge. It's a worldwide global challenge where society collectively does not yet believe that children growing up in low-income communities can succeed in school and can succeed in life, as well as children from more affluent communities. And until we attack that belief and mindset, it's going to be hard for us to wrap our head around what we do across the entire system, the entire country, to improve. Because for our leaders to have the political will and determination if we don't collectively believe a different outcome is possible. And again, you know, I don't know what the Ireland stats are, but I imagine they're probably not that terribly different from the United States, where, depending on the time and place of your birth, if you are born into a family that's in the top quartile income, you have an 80% chance of going to and through college, the universities. And if you are born into a bottom quartile income family, you have an 8% chance.
Yeah.
And too many people believe that's just the way it is. And one thing I always the mindset that what I use to kind of illustrate this point is I ask people, imagine where you guys are too, across the ocean. Picture two secondary schools, two in Ireland, wherever people are listening. Take one school that's an elite university prep school, public, private, doesn't matter. Then take a typical large comprehensive secondary school serving a low-income community. Picture both these schools in our heads. Start with the elite university prep school. A kid there is going to graduate and go to universities. Is that amazing? No, they all do. Now imagine a kid there drops out of school. Oh my goodness. Yeah. You know, the moms are whispering in carpool pickup line, right? Now transfer go to the other school in a low-income community. A kid there drops out of school. So yeah, well, have to. More than half of some of our schools, right? A kid there graduates, does well, goes to universities, does well in the universities, goes out in the world, does well in the world. You know, Aiden, we still make a TV movie of the week about that kid.
Yeah.
So that just shows the societal level, we still hold different beliefs, expectations on our children, depending on the time and place of their birth. And that's what we have. That's, I think, been the biggest challenge for us to overcome. And even like when Kip did this early on in the 90s, people would make these yes buts. I call these excuses. They'd say, yeah, fine. Well, Kip works, but it's because you're doing it. You're finding like the handful of kids in that low income community who care, and the rest of the kids and families don't care or are not, you know, don't have the skills to learn. And So one reason why we've grown around the U.S. is just like wherever people are making these excuses saying, well, it can work in this community but can't work in that community, we want to start schools there and prove the possible. Because the day the excuses end or the day the solutions are going to start. And that's what we've been doing across the U.S. thus far. And now starting to do it across the world too.
That's fantastic because it's reflective of any kind of innovation program that you will only get so far until you get top level buy-in from your CEO or senior managers. And in your world, that's coming from top politicians, you know, presidential status, that until those guys, you know, make change, you know, right. You're only going to get so far. You cannot win. That's one of the things I thought was so reflective, Mike, of your work and the success you've had despite that, because in any industry or business without senior management support, you know, you're only going to get so far. But I never thought about that, your point about our own perceptions that are, you know, it's like a bias that we all have. We just expect it because that's the world as we know it today. And that's accepted right. that's that's the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. That's what, you know, I like when I'm talking on the stump, I'll read Dr. Seuss on Beyond Zebra and talks about like the alphabet beyond Z. And I make the point that there's other, we keep faces, you know, one time we thought the world was flat, right? Until people realized it wasn't. And just 100 years ago, we thought smoking was okay for you. In fact, we thought smoking helped athletic performance. And now we know, you know, now we know about tobacco better. I mean, so like we have to make sure we have to challenge ourselves to not just think like the gospel that we believe today is the way it is. And there's like there's only 20% of the population that's really university ready, and the rest of the rest of the kids better go figure out some day labor type job, which by the way those type of careers are disappearing anyway as technology improves. So we have to do more. One thing I will go back to what you said is you're right, we do need support from politicians and our community leaders, but there's a trap in that we need their support, but we don't want them to come up with the top-down solution. Because that's where we get in trouble, is when we expect the education minister to come up with the one solution that's going to work for all the millions of children in the school system. There's not, right? Our children are vastly different, so the way we deliver education has to be vastly different. We can't expect one size fits all for all the kids. So at the top, we need their support to allow bottom-up solutions to happen. And that's, I think, in the United States, these public charter schools that have started, the free schools that started in UK, at least in England. These are examples of where NGOs are starting public schools with support of the government to start so that there's new ways to deliver education to communities. So it's not one size fits all has been so important.
There's a great cartoon you reminded me of where it shows like an elephant and a monkey and a cheetah all lined up and a teacher going, jump through this hoop, and the hoop's tiny. And it's about the education system. It's going, that's what we're actually asking them to do. All these kids are different. They're different mentally. The background's different. The biases are different. Yet we wanted one size fits all education system to create drones. And the irony being, the drones are going to replace those rote tasks that we're training people to fit in to do. Then, you know, you see self-driving cars, people can't drive a cab anymore. You know, and then there's more people in the world because of technology. So the work you're doing is almost cushioning us for that blow that's coming.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be, as Wayne Gretzky taught us in the NHL, we have to skate where the puck is going, not where the puck is.
Yeah.
And the way we're delivering education, like the fact that there's government-funded education as a concept, I think it's a noble concept and we should all defend it. We should not let that go away, that the community is going to pool its resources to educate all of our children. That's crucial. But then there's the way we deliver education. And I know it's slightly different there in Ireland, but like in the United States, the way we deliver education for the last 100 years, over 100 years since the Industrial Revolution, is that we create these tax zones called school districts. And the school districts elect a board to govern the school district. And the board hires superintendent. The superintendent will hire these principals, these heads of schools. And the heads will run these schools, and we draw zones around the schools. And if you live in that zone, that school you go to, right? What I'm describing, that's not government-funded public education. That's how we've chosen to deliver it. And we shouldn't have so much hubris to believe in the last 100 years we've created God's gift to how you deliver education to all of our children, and there's no other way to do it. Charter schools, free schools are one more way to do it. And charter schools are not God's gift either. But the idea being, let's get out of the definition of insanity loop. If we know that the world has changed, and that now most of our kids are going to have to go to some form of post-secondary school to have the training and the skills they need to have a career and a job in society in what today, and especially what's coming in the next few decades. What are we doing to deliver education differently to prepare our kids for that moving target? Because after all, the purpose of education is not to pass a government exam.
Absolutely. Right?
The purpose of education is, what can you do with your education when you're done with it?
The way education is going, it's not just about the hoop you need to jump through, which is get through the exam. It's what does it prepare you for life? What qualities, integrity, elasticity, all these kind of skills. And it's one of the things I found from reading about the work you've done with Kip, is that these kids have an unbelievably overlooked talent, which is grit, because if they can get through the system, these people make unbelievable entrepreneurs, business people, and workers, because they've overcome that.
Yep, and that's another mind exercise I do with people, because I'll tell people, like, everyone who's listening, who's an employer, who has to recruit and select people for an open position, there's lots of different ways we go about it. What I've never heard anyone do is tell their assistant to go through the stack of resumes and applications, research everyone's government exam score when they were in high school, and hire the top score sight unseen.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we definitely want intelligent people, articulate people working for us, but we also want people who are creative, who can solve problems, who've got that grit and the tenacity, who can follow directions, give directions, work on a team, who've got self-control. And to your point, like, the grit and self-control and optimism, none of us are born in this world knowing those things any more than we know algebra, right? So those things have to get taught. And we learn them from our parents and our families and our churches and our neighbors. And it makes sense we should also learn them where we're spending most of our waking hours as children, which is school. So that's how we're viewing that. So it's not either or. It's that academics and character are the yin and yang of what we both need to do to prepare kids for success in post-secondary school and life.
What you're doing is preparing the world and setting an example, and you're leading by example for the rest of the world to follow. And where can people find out more about KIPP if they'd like to end the one school?
Yeah, just go on the web to www.kipp.org. And there's also the One World Network of Schools. People can Google that. One World Network of Schools is the NGO we set up to help educators in other countries learn from what KIPP's doing in the U.S. so they can do similar work in their country.
Thank you for being a leader in this and for all the work you've done. And thank you for your time today. Mike Feinberg, co-founder of KIPP, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Aidan. Talk soon. Appreciate you.
Thanks, man.
Bye.